From oil to metals, all eyes are trained on the commodities markets today. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Victoria Craig. Good morning. Let's kick things off with a few numbers now. Oil prices have hit a 13-month high as the American South is caught in the grips of a deep freeze. That's not only boosted demand for electricity there, but threatened Texas oil production after wells and refineries temporarily shut down yesterday. The price for West Texas Intermediate crude is up 0.6% today to just under $60 a barrel, while BP and Royal Dutch Shell stocks are up 1.2% and 0.7% here in London. Meanwhile, shares of mining giant BHP Billiton are up 0.7%. That move comes after the company reported half-year profits that hit a seven-year high thanks to a surge in iron ore prices. The company's boss, Mike Henry, told the BBC what's caused the boom in demand.
I think what it reflects is a very strong recovery underway within China, but also in recent months we've seen an acceleration of the economic recovery in other economies as well. That's in the near term. We're seeing steel demand increase on the back of that, and one of the key ingredients, as was called out, is iron ore.
Strong prices have also driven shares of mining and commodity trading company Glencore, one of the world's biggest, up more than 3% today. Here's one more number for you. 15 million. That's the number of people in the UK who have received at least one coronavirus vaccine dose, a target the government sources told the BBC has been met for this month. That kind of progress in the country's vaccine program isn't the same seen around the world, but getting better, more equal access to doses is a priority for the World Trade Organization's new director general, Dr. Ngozi Okonjo-Iweala. The BBC's Jonathan Josephs has that story.
It is so agreed.
With that bang of the gavel at World Trade Organization headquarters in Geneva, the protracted process to pick a new leader came to an end. And leadership is desperately needed, not least because of the damage the coronavirus pandemic has wrought on the global economy. Dr. Ngozi Okonjo-Iweala is well qualified. The former Nigerian finance minister was also number two at the World Bank and has made much of her experience in bringing about change in those roles.
For me, principally, there are so many problems to be solved. And first and foremost is the issue of the pandemic. And looking at how WTO rules can help make access to vaccines, therapeutics and diagnostics more accessible and affordable for poor countries. I'm very proud that I was associated with the COVAX facility, which is supposed to help poor countries get access.
Dr. Okonjo-Iweala added that vaccine nationalism wouldn't help end the pandemic. She said WTO rules could help accelerate the licensing of vaccines in a way that protects the intellectual property of countries that have funded their development.
The 100 members still have export restrictions and prohibitions. So a priority will be how can they lift this so that medical supplies will be more freely available.
Such achievements, she said, could build trust at the WTO in order to solve its many problems, which range from an elusive deal on fishing subsidies to the US-China trade war, climate change, and the digital economy.
Jonathan Joseph's reporting there about worries over vaccine nationalism. Now to talk of vaccine diplomacy. India began commercial exports of vaccines to select countries in January and is likely to ramp up distribution in the weeks ahead. New Delhi's focus so far has specifically been on regional neighbors, gifting millions of doses to countries as a sign of goodwill. As the BBC's Arunade Mukherjee reports, some experts are seeing that as India's attempt to counter China's dominance in the region.
A plane lands, and from the cargo hold emerge several cartons of the Oxford University AstraZeneca Covishield jab. The COVID-19 vaccine, manufactured by the Serum Institute of India, is being flown in from India to several nations. Pictures and tweets of thanks from heads of states have been on full display on social media. Ahead of rolling out the vaccines to foreign countries, on the 9th of January, Prime Minister Modi had a message for the world.
India has developed two Made in India vaccines. Being the pharmacy of the world, we'll ensure vaccines reach every corner of the world. We've done it before, we'll do it again.
Experts say India has managed to get an edge over China in rolling out its vaccine exports. Mr. Sudarshan Jain, the Secretary General of the Indian Pharmaceutical Alliance, feels it helps New Delhi showcase itself as the more reliable ally.
The gain will be that India will assert its position as far as pharmacy of the world is concerned and as a dependable supplier of medicine.
Both India and China played a crucial role in the world, sending personal protective equipment and medicines to fight COVID-19 last year. Vaccine diplomacy may be the next stage of pushing that soft power. Over the years, New Delhi has grown uncomfortable with increasing Chinese influence in India's backyard. China has flexed its economic muscle to push investments in infrastructure and defense in the neighborhood. India has repeatedly tried to keep pace and now hopes to leverage to its advantage the fact that it produces 60% of the world's vaccines. But scholars like Manoj Joshi from the Observer Research Foundation say it may not be sustainable.
The currency of influence remains the economy, finance, the military aid. That currency is not going to change. Vaccines are not going to become the currency of the future.
In the first week of February, India announced an ambitious target to fulfill 70% of the world's vaccine needs. Experts have cautioned, while the generosity is good, India's 1.3 billion population should not be left behind. In Delhi, I'm the BBC's Arunoday Mukherjee for Marketplace.
Don't forget, all our vaccine coverage lives under the Fast Track tab at marketplace.org. In London, I'm Victoria Craig with the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.